Hello and welcome to The Scoop, a provincial newscast and podcast with stories from LJI journalists around British Columbia. Each week, reporters from Revelstoke, Cortez Island, Kootenay, Terrace, Prince George, and Smithers will share the news affecting their place in BC. I'm your host and producer, Pamela Hassan, from CSCK News in Smithers. The Scoop was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative Program, or LJI. Follow The Scoop on CICK, Smithers Community Radio, 93.9 FM, every Thursday and Saturday at noon, online at smithersradio.com, and of course, wherever you get your podcasts.
Today on The Scoop, Cosmos Sheldrake has been announced as a late addition to the one-day music festival on Cortez Island known as Love Fest. Sheldrake is a UK-based multi-instrumentalist and producer who grew up partially on Cortez Island. He has been releasing music for the past 10 years, and his third album, Eye to the Ear, was just released in April. Hear the full story from Lewis Belcourt at CKTZ on Cortez Island. City of Abbotsford Mayor Ross Siemens has requested a meeting with counterparts from the BC Government and Ministry of Housing and the BC Housing and the organizers of the month-old protest homeless encampment stationed at City Hall. Mike McCulloch at CIVL in Abbotsford has that story. August 31st is International Overdose Awareness Day, and purple chairs are being placed around Nanaimo throughout the month to share the stories of those who lost their lives to the overdose crisis. Lauren McKenzie with CHLY in Nanaimo will bring us that story. And a celebration took place at the Zelkant Friendship Center Hall on Wednesday in Smithers to celebrate a 37-unit housing project that is currently under construction, which is slated to be complete and ready for residents by February 2026. Pam Hassan at CICK News in Smithers will bring us more on that story. Stay with us.
This is a CKTZ News update. I'm Louis Belcourt.
Cosmos Sheldrake, the internationally renowned artist with roots on Cortez, has been added to the lineup of Love Fest for this year. Cosmo is a UK-based multi-instrumentalist and producer and has been releasing music for 10 years now. He just released his third album titled Eye to the Ear on April 12, 2024. Love Fest is also featuring Afro-Cuban jazz artist Adonis Puentes and his band, contemporary country songwriter Elise LeBlanc, a special retrospective set from Anne Mortefee and her band, and many more acts. Love Fest is Saturday, August 10th. I spoke with Benji Duke, co-producer of the festival, for more.
And tell me about the new addition to the lineup to Love Fest this year.
Yeah, well, we're quite excited. Cosmos Sheldrake is joining the bill, which is pretty cool. We've got such a good, varied selection of music on the bill this year. And to have then have Cosmo come and join in is just going to give it just another edge, which is kind of exciting.
Along with this new addition, Cosmo, who else is headlining this year at Love Fest?
Well, this year we have Adonis Puentes will be coming with an all-star band this year. Adonis was there last year. For those of you who went, he had a real family band on. They did all kinds of like Buena Vista Social Club, all kinds of Cuban classics. This year he's bringing his own personal band who he tours all across North America with. So that's going to be fantastic. We have Elise LeBlanc will be here with her trio playing some sort of old country, which is going to be really cool. She has the most fantastic young fiddle player with her. Anyone who saw them at the Manson's Hall will know just how terrific that guy is. Oh, he also doesn't have any shoes. So if anyone has shoes, I think he might need shoes. Not sure though. That might just be what he does. We have Anne Mortefee is going to be doing a retrospective of her career, which is super exciting because obviously everyone on the island knows who Anne Mortefee is. She's one of the most talented singers you could possibly imagine. But for her to actually do a retrospective over the last 40 years of her musical career is just going to be super exciting.
Awesome.
Yeah, who else have we got there on there? We've got Doc Fingers will be coming over as well. He's a great blues guy. Yeah, there's a whole slew of acts. There's some posters around Cortez right now, and we're going to be giving out programs on the day so people can keep track of who's coming up next and who they've already seen.
And why should people that were already planning on going to Love Fest, why should they be excited to see Cosmo play and for his addition to the festival?
Well, Cosmo, as you know, he's a well-known person on this island. He brings a different type of energy to anyone else who's on the bill. He's going to be sort of like mixing a electronic with folk music. He just has an energy about him and a passion, which I think is just palpable. I saw him play at Love Fest maybe 2 or 3 years ago, and it was just a beautiful dance party. So I think it's just going to give an extra edge which we didn't previously have before. It's just going to be another sort of type of music which we weren't covering. So it's just going to be an extra. It's just going to be a great value add, and it's going to be a great show.
Louis Belcour, CKTZ News, Cortez Island. CKTZ News is brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative, the program funded by Heritage Canada and administered through the Community Radio Fund of Canada.
Abbotsford Mayor Ross Siemens has called for a meeting between the city, the Ministry of Housing, BC Housing, and the organizers of a protest homeless encampment set up at City Hall since June 29th. Brittany Maple is the program coordinator of Abbotsford Drug War Survivors and the executive director of the Matsqui Abbotsford Impact Society. I spoke with her on July 31st.
We just received a request this afternoon from the city for our availability. They're looking at arranging a meeting between us, BC Housing, the province, and the city. We are still awaiting the date and time for that, but we have suggested our availability next week, and we look forward to having the opportunity to discuss this proposal.
The proposal is what is outlined in the petition Abbotsford Council received for information on Tuesday this week, the last council meeting before it takes a summer break. The petition, signed by 98 people by July 22nd per the city's meeting agenda, called upon mayor and council to, quote, designate undeveloped municipal land to provide safe and legal camping spaces with appropriate facilities, unquote. Here's Mayor Siemens at the July 30th council meeting per the city's meeting archive.
I did meet with the Minister of Housing, and we will be sharing that petition with him and his staff.
I contacted Mayor Siemens for comment, and he elected to issue a statement via communication staff. Quoted in part, I requested a meeting take place between the city, ministry, and BC Housing to discuss next steps and start moving toward a resolution that includes meeting with the protest organizers to discuss their concerns directly. It is the responsibility of the province in addressing housing issues where there are gaps in types of social housing being made available, and by not having those gaps addressed, municipalities are bearing the brunt with little to no support. End of quote. I contacted the Ministry of Housing to ask for a comment, and Minister Ravi Kalon opted to issue a statement through communications staff as well, quoted in part. Encampments are not a safe nor a dignified solution to the ongoing homelessness crisis, which reflects the significant demand for housing in Abbotsford and the need to stop the cycle of homelessness and prevent future encampments, end quote. Maple seizes on Kalon's use of the word dignity.
We have individuals who feel that they experience more dignity and autonomy and authority in their own lives when they're living in encampments than they do in the shelter and housing programs that are being provided.
As of publication, Abbotsford Drug War Survivors petition has grown to 148 supporters. While Abbotsford City staff estimate there are about 31 people camped out at City Hall, along with 38 tents, 2 canopy tents, and a trailer. For Civil Radio, I'm Mike McCullough. This story was brought to you by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. For this story and more, visit frequencynews.ca.
This is the CHUI News Update. Purple chairs are being placed around Nanaimo leading up to International Overdose Awareness Day on August 31st, sharing the stories of those who have lost their lives to the overdose crisis. Throughout August, the Nanaimo Community Action Team, or CAT, is raising awareness about the overdose crisis and the urgent need to destigmatize substance use in Nanaimo. To raise awareness and start conversations, CAT is calling on community members to display purple chairs on porches and at the entrances of homes or stores with stories of people who have died from a drug overdose through the Purple Chair campaign. Each chair will have a different story or dedication written on it. Beverly Plains is the coordinator for Nanaimo CAT. Plains, who recently took on a role, says she is passionate about her role and the work she'll be doing with it.
I think it's a push that I needed because I like to advocate for people at the ground level. And I'm also a person with lived experience. So I have a really kind of dynamic understanding of the role that the toxic drug crisis plays in our community. So It's exciting and it's a lot of work, but it's good work.
She says the campaign is to raise awareness to the toxic drug crisis and remember the lives lost from it. She says that placing these chairs with the names or memories will start conversations to humanize the issues and drive meaningful change.
So it includes installation of purple chairs. We're asking the community to find any old purple chair they have lying around that they don't use anymore, maybe, or one that they do, and just paint it purple and then put the name on the chair or a fact about the overdose crisis that we're in. And then this will get conversations started.
The color purple is to raise awareness of overdoses and reduce the stigma of drug-related deaths, as well to recognize the grief felt by friends and family who have lost loved ones to the overdose crisis.
The purple color is a symbol of our fight against it, the overdose epidemic. And the chairs serve as a poignant reminder of the lives lost and the need for continued advocacy.
Along with the Purple Chair campaign throughout the month, CAT is also asking for donations of purple chairs for their event on August 31st at Diana Krall Plaza in downtown Nanaimo. CAT hopes to fill up the plaza with 500 purple chairs.
I just picture this sea of purple chairs, and each chair stands is a symbol of the number of people in Nanaimo that have died since it was declared a state of emergency in 2016.
According to the BC Coroner Service, between 2016 to June 30th, 2024, there have been 488 unregulated drug deaths in Nanaimo. In 2024, as of June 30th, Nanaimo has seen 53 overdose-related deaths, with 2023 having the highest number yet with 114 deaths.
They have a visually compelling display of how many people are actually affected by this. And then just to know that every single one of those chairs, each of those people they have that is here still missing them.
Plain says an important reason for sharing the stories is for their loved ones to convey that they are not forgotten and their stories matter.
The campaign is a tribute to their memory and a call to action to prevent further loss, but that we stand in with them in solidarity and commit to advocating for the necessary changes to save lives and support those affected by substance use. And I can't stress enough how these deaths are preventable. They can be prevented. We have the power to prevent them, yet people unnecessarily die from this every single day.
She says for those that want to share their stories, to do so in a way that they feel best protects themselves, as there is still judgment around substance use.
For the most part, people want to share their stories. They want to be seen and heard within our society. And really, it would really help to highlight the humanity behind these statistics. Like, we're bombarded with numbers and like we talk about these deaths in numbers, but like every single number in that statistic is an actual human being who has actual family members that love and miss them.
She says the purpose of sharing lived experiences is to shift the perspective and reduce the stigma about substance use and overdoses to foster empathy and understanding. The event on International Overdose Awareness Day will feature a resource fair, speeches, a comedy show, and performances recognizing the day, as well as an open mic for anyone who wishes to share their stories at the event.
I remember last year I heard a few stories and they were absolutely compelling. Like, they moved me to tears, a few of them. Like, these are real people. It makes it more real when someone tells their story in their own voice. It creates that layer of empathy, I think, in the listener.
Plain says the campaign is to foster a sense of community and solidarity by standing together in this fight by humanizing issues through personal stories. International Overdose Awareness Day is on August 31st, and the event will be taking place at Diana Krall Plaza from 12 to 3 p.m. For CHY News, this is Lauren McKenzie.
Yesterday, a celebration took place at the Zelkant Friendship Center on 3rd Ave in Smithers. The cause of the celebration was the official groundbreaking of the 37-unit affordable housing project that is under construction at 1611 Main Street as you listen to this newscast. It's called Kanu'kit'yik, which means wetland housing, and was named by the Kasiuk House of the Gidimden Clan. This three-story building is Smithers' first Indigenous-led housing project that aims to house single occupancy all the way up to four-bedroom homes for Indigenous people and families, including Métis and Inuit peoples. Operational and capital funding is provided by BC Housing's Indigenous Housing Fund, and the land was provided by the town of Smithers via a long-term lease agreement. Speeches were made and gifts were bestowed to the many municipal and provincial partners, Indigenous housing partners, chiefs from multiple houses, politicians, staff, board members, and project managers on this exciting new project. Completion is scheduled for January 2026, with tenants moving in February of 2026. Here are some interviews and snippets of speeches made during yesterday's celebration.
My Wet'suwet'en name is Wadatsi, which translates to heart in the sky. My English name is Andrew Tom. I'm the president at the Tsleil-Waututh Friendship Center.
Andrew, in your speech, it really sounds like you were just supporting a lot of departments and there were so many moving pieces to this. So being here today to finally celebrate this, how does this feel to you?
I'm just ecstatic. I'm just over the moon with excitement because you're finally being able to see a construction site that's in motion. We had so much to go through with red tape. There was bylaws, there was zoning, there was permit. So there's all of that. And then we've faced challenges with timelines, proposals and grants, partnerships. There was a lot of moving pieces, but we're really happy to be celebrating the groundbreaking of this project. So 37 units, it's a milestone for us. And we're not done yet. So we still have an apartment building that we're working on in Houston. And so it's just a lot of moving pieces, but it's through a dedicated team that we're able to see projects like this finally off the ground. Yeah.
Hi, my name is Annette Morgan. My traditional name is Knox Dakin. I'm from Gitneau, executive director of the Tsleil-Waututh Friendship Center in Smithers, Houston, and Deeslake.
Tsleil-Waututh has been the leader in Smithers, Deeslake, and Houston, as well as Tsleil-Waututh, to advocate for Indigenous-led urban-based housing. What kind of policies or mindsets do you think that a success of a project like this is actually changing when it comes to housing?
Sure. I think the number one is ensuring we follow protocols. Second, ensuring that we follow Indigenous laws, to whom each of us, whatever nation that we're from, is ensuring that we're also good stewards on territory.
Do you feel like all the partnerships, be it provincial or municipal, do you feel like they've been sufficient in wanting to work together in the way that Tsleil-Waututh, especially through your housing survey that you did, do you feel like that has been something that they've really adhered to?
Sure. I think there is definitely challenges along the way. Nathan has been obviously a champion for the Friendship Center here in Smithers for many years. He's always participating, ensuring he's contributing and as well doing the work. So it's something that we really value with our partnerships. It is a lot of work. It's sometimes amplifying the voices of those people who need to share their stories is a lot of work, and it's a lot to process, and we recognize that.
I'm Margaret Fo. I'm the CEO for the Aboriginal Housing Management Association of BC.
In your speech, you spoke about a development permit hearing in Mission and spoke about the importance of ceremony when integrating colonial systems into partnerships with traditional land projects, such as, and you mentioned the Taha housing project. Does Kanifkiyi housing, does it feel like it continues this legacy?
Oh, I absolutely believe it. And I think everything that Annette and Tsleil-Waututh Friendship Center have done has been demonstration of how Indigenous-led solutions are done in a different way. They acknowledge those connections to land, to community. And as I said, when you look at this drawing, they've acknowledged the needs and the fears and the issues of community in their development. And so tying all that together, to me, just sets a real positive vibe, just as I shared the Ta'a housing story, because it is a success. 20 plus years later, it's only now going through some massive energy retrofitting and stuff, but it's been well tended. The residents feel welcome. They feel like it's home. And this is what they're setting the foundation for. They're setting the foundation for people to see this as home and to maybe help bridge tensions in the community, to see that Indigenous people, when they are felt that they belong, that they have a place to call home in the broader community, it starts to bridge relationships for community, broadly speaking.
Nathan Cullen, MLA for Stikine.
It's been a long road getting here to celebrate a new healing approach to housing. Is the province learning a new approach with this unit and the success of this housing that's being built in Smithers, this Indigenous-led housing?
Yeah, for the first time in our community, we've got a project designed with and for Indigenous people, culturally safe, healthy, supportive, and affordable. It's a benefit to the more than 37 people, 37 families that are going to live here, but I think it's a benefit to our whole community to show a different way of working together rather than waiting and having something imposed. It's just, this is an awesome day. It's from the ground up, right? That the desire comes from Indigenous people about something that needs to happen. We know housing is a serious issue. We know homelessness is a serious issue in our community. And rather than, again, have somebody from Ottawa or Victoria design something and just plunk it down on us, building it together means that the success will be in the DNA of the building. And that's going to be great and supported. And I think it's going to be really successful for our community.
I wasn't able to get an interview with the housing advisor for Zalkant Housing Society, Lydia Howard. So I wanted to share a part of her touching speech.
Together, we have worked to transform a underutilized and contaminated site into what will be 37 units of safe and affordable housing for Indigenous families and elders. I think we can all be very proud of what we've done together. There are also two important Indigenous-led organizations that I want to acknowledge today that have been supporting us long before we had a site or even a cent of funding and really supported us. The first is the Aboriginal Housing Management Association, who have recognized our vision and share our goal for developing housing for Indigenous community members. And they have come alongside us and supported us and advocated for us and just been there to help us out as we move through the project. This first project. And the other is Luma Development Management, our development consultants, and they have provided us expertise and guidance and mentorship and support, and they've become a part of our team. And finally, I want to acknowledge all of the community members that we serve at the Friendship Centre who have participated in our project over the years, taking their time and providing their knowledge and expertise and providing input on our project. This generous sharing of knowledge doesn't go unnoticed, and many of you are here today, so thank you very much for being here. And what you have done to share your inputs on our project has allowed our very talented architects at Studio 9 Architecture and Planning to bring together a design that is not only beautiful and welcoming, but also safe and accessible and culturally informed. I'm really grateful for the work of the community members to give their time and energy to provide input on the project we've designed. And as many of you who know me know, I could talk about housing forever. It's my favorite topic, so I'm not going to talk any longer.
The MC for the event and constant source of humor and education was Mel Basil. And Mel is explaining in this next portion of a speech was photos that were rotating behind him on a large screen that we in attendance could see. So I just wanted to share a part of that speech from Mel Basil with you as well.
You've probably been noticing our staff on this television set. What they're conducting is a very quiet and subdued groundbreaking ceremony prior to construction. We couldn't go and ask the construction workers to clear the space for all of us to enjoy a groundbreaking event. So we took photos of marking the territory with a piece of medicine. It's a Red Mountain alder given to me by my late mother, Joanne Peter. She did that to teach people how to harvest Red Mountain alder bark as a medicine. So we used it as a stake to stake the middle of the apartment building. And staff walking around in these photos with cedar boughs, cleansing the site. It's been bioremediated, but it's now been blessed by the people and by elders with prayer and ceremony. The photos up here are of the groundbreaking event on July 8th. We kept it subdued and quiet because there was some passings in the communities in that time. And so we very quietly had a small ceremony with just staff from Houston and from Smithers. We're very thankful that we were able to go and do that. Much like Lydia, new to building housing in a community, I was new to a groundbreaking ceremony, so I'm very happy we put our best foot forward for that. Step to the podium, we'd like to invite Mayor Atrill from the town of Smithers.
Good morning. Thanks, everyone. Denise, Sakaze, Skaze. Thank you very much for the invitation to be here today. It's felt very serious in here so far, and I have some things to say that may hold that tone, but I just wanted to acknowledge at the outset, we're also here to celebrate today. This is a great day. It's fun to kick things off, and to recognize the work that's gone into it, but not forget that there is an element of Yahoo in this day. Honored guests, members of all the organizations that have been a part of this, thank you for being here. It's my honor on behalf of the Town of Smithers and Town Council to be here. I just wanted to acknowledge as well other members of Town Council who are in the room, and I hope I've got them all. Somewhere in the room is Deputy Mayor Frank Ray, Councillor Sam Raven, Councillor Calvin Elliott, and I see from our staff team, our Chief Administrative Officer Michael Dewar, and Deepa Chandran, our planner, who was involved in this project. So just wanted to let folks know that we are here and excited to be a part of this today. This is indeed a historic day for this community. It's been years in the making, the planning, the dreaming. Secure the site, make the plans, revise the plans, secure the funding again, find the partners. It's been a lot of work. Lydia's been there and she knows what all that means. There have been a lot of meetings. And all the while through that, hold the dream, housing for people who need it and who will have a neighborhood to be part of and to help create. Indigenous-led housing, 37 units of family housing. What's a house? Dunan, Lucy was talking about this, a house, a home. At its most basic, it's a shelter. It's a place to lay your head at night, to make a meal, to spend time with your children, your family, your friends. Perhaps just a safe space to be on your own, maybe enjoy the company of your pets. A house or an apartment is a home. It's a sense of security, a familiarity, of where memories are made and held, where laughter and tears are shared. A home is where family and friends are welcome, and it's part of the neighborhood, part of the community. This housing project, as Lydia said, she's been used to calling it for a long time, it's going to create all of that. And we welcome in this community that addition, this new neighborhood, new community that is going to change our community for the better. The Town of Smithers is proud to have been an active partner in this project. We were able to find and secure the property, including the remediation. I love the term bioremediate, Mel, wherever that came from, that was great. And there was financial support as well. We were able to utilize some of the funds from our Northern Capital Planning Grant to help with the remediation. I do want to acknowledge the staff team that have been key to this. Lydia was referencing those meetings. Mark Allen, Deepa Chandran, our planner, is here. And the Development Services Department. And to council, and it's been many councils that have been through this project together. And finally, I'm just going to come back to celebrate, acknowledge the words of Chair Andrew Tom, recognize the leadership team of Zelkant Friendship Center Society initially and the Housing Society now created. Thank you for your vision, your determined efforts to provide this much needed housing for Indigenous people in this community. And it is really a celebration. Thank you again for inviting us to be here. And I look forward to the next steps when we go beyond the groundbreaking and see things actually growing up out of the ground. Thank you again very much.
My name is Crystal Grinke, and I am a director on the Zelkant Friendship Center Society Board of Directors.
What were some of the hurdles that this board kind of had to reimagine or work around in order to make this housing project a success?
Honestly, I think it is very new to the community, so it was certainly wanting to build up the understanding of how important it is to have access to Indigenous housing. And a lot of the barriers really came around with, we had environmental barriers, we had political barriers. We also did it during COVID, and so there was a lot of that. And we did have a small staff, but a lot of it, like our stuff on the board, is volunteer-based. And so time was always a factor as well. And yeah, just really trying to make it all come together at the same time. And it, you know, we were really able to come together when we had barriers and be able to stop and assess the situation and then understand what it was going to take for us to move forward. So definitely a lot of time and planning, patience, and certainly resilience.
Perfect. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
My name is Lucy Gagnon.
Okay, so This has been a long time coming, and in your speech you shared about just the process of how actually policies really needed to change and the importance of Indigenous-led home projects and housing projects. So today, to be celebrating, how does this feel to you personally?
It feels amazing because this is the first time for Smithers. And when we built the apartment in Woodset, that was the first time they built on reserve. This is BC Housing, or funded on reserves. Things are changing, and it's exciting.
Do you feel like this feels like a collaborative approach for, as mentioned, first times for a province? Do you feel like this is a project that people are really learning from?
I feel so. I'm not terribly involved with this project, but Lydia has contacted me, and I just feel like, yeah, the more we can work together, the better it is for everybody.
And that's this week's episode of The Scoop, a podcast and broadcast featuring stories from remote BC by the journalists in the communities of Smithers, Cortez Island, Revelstoke, Kootenai, Prince George, and Terrace. This program was made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Local Journalism Initiative Program. Tune in next week for another episode and follow us online wherever you get your podcasts.